Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Mosaic Life Podcast. The goal of the Mosaic Life Podcast is to explore happiness and what it means to us as individuals and why so many of us chase it, and yet we never seem to find it. If this particular episode resonates with you and you find value in it, you can support the podcast in a number of different ways, the easiest of which is leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That helps others just like yourselves discover the content created here. You can also join the Mosaic Life Circle newsletter at themosaiclifepodcast.com. And right now, if you sign up for the newsletter, you will be entered to win a Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirt, and you will also receive in your email inbox my 5 most life-changing books of 2020. Visit themosaiclifepodcast.com to get started. I'm really, really excited about this conversation. Before we started the podcast, I had absolutely no idea what emotional intelligence meant. I didn't know we weren't our emotions. I thought it was pretty clear cut that we weren't in control of how we feel or how we were supposed to feel, for that matter. I was under the impression that if someone cuts me off on the freeway, getting mad was the only acceptable emotion. Not indifference, and certainly not no emotion at all. And then I discovered stoicism. But still not knowing the term emotional intelligence and not knowing there was an entire field of study supporting it. So you can imagine my delight when I discovered I didn't have to accept my feelings and emotions at face value. Anger doesn't feel good. Some may make the argument that the rush of endorphins they get when we punch our steering wheels or scream profanities at the person, the human, in front of us is cathartic. But if we step back and look at the opportunity cost of our rage and the effect it has on our subsequent interactions throughout the day, it's not hard to see how damaging our relationships with negativity can be. I don't know if I've gone so far as saying this on the podcast before, but I've made it a goal to have as few opinions as possible. And what that does for me is open my mind up to new knowledge and insight, and to accept it without judgment. That doesn't mean I have to believe it to be true. It simply means I can think about it objectively and test it to be true or false. It also prevents me from feeling obligated to defend an opinion that may have been formed if not for no other reason than it was the only one available. All of this to say, I'm thrilled to welcome my guest today. Eric Pennington is the managing partner at Spirit of EQ. He leads the strategy for keeping the mission moving and growing. He is also responsible for all upfront client interaction and onboarding. Eric is a certified practitioner in varied emotional intelligence and neuroscience tools and has over 15 years of practical entrepreneurship and leadership experience inside of small and large organizations alike. Eric is the author of the eye-opening book, The Well-Being Guide, Making the Most of Life and Work. Based on personal experiences and as a follow-up to his 2008 book, Waking Up in Corporate America, the guide is practical and offers readers the opportunity to evaluate their own lives through self-discovery. As you listen to this conversation, I present a challenge to you. Allow yourself to question your preconceived notions while you listen and while you go about your day. Your emotions are not good, nor are they bad. They simply are. Allow yourself to be open to new information so you, no one else, can use it however you see fit. Please welcome my guest, Eric Pennington. Cool. Well, Eric, how's it going?
It is going very, very well.
I'm glad to hear that.
Monday morning and there's no sun, but you know, we're in Ohio, so.
I do my best to take the winter and just say, here is the time that I put my nose to the grindstone and I just work. So when we come out the other side, I just feel so much better about my time spent, you know, hunkered down. And, you know, to me, at least in Ohio, it feels like February is generally the darkest before the dawn, as trite and cliche as that sounds, but we're reaching the end.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I actually just watched one of your videos talking about exercising optimism going into the new year. And it was a great video.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was great content.
It's like a message for myself as well.
Well, I think it's important to do that. You know, I've kind of been reflecting a lot lately on why I do this podcast. You know, why do I spend so much time doing this to myself when, you know, it may never reach epic proportions like a Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan. And I've come to decide that, you know, I do this for myself. And it's great that I have an audience. I'm truly, truly appreciative of that. I'm equally and more appreciative of people like you who take the time to actually have conversations with me. But this is something that scratches my own itch. It allows me to have conversations that challenge my notions of life itself, of how we operate within it. And it's really important that I understand what my motivations are for that.
That's a very wise approach, Trey. I think it probably has and will continue to serve you well.
I hope so. So how, speaking about 2021 and 2020 for that matter, how have things been going for you?
You know, I guess one of those things where, you know, someone could say everybody has felt some level of weight. And probably from a historical standpoint, maybe outside of 9/11, it's probably one of the few things that you could say everybody can connect to it, right?
Right.
Because everybody's been impacted. I kind of look at it through the lens of, you know, time and how much time I've been given to do what I've been put here to do. And that's kind of served me well on a couple of fronts. One, it's kept my focus and helped me not be distracted maybe by circumstances and whether it be, you know, you mentioned a video that you took a look at for 2021. You know, I try to remember that circumstances, and I won't get into maybe the deep definition of that, but ultimately they're going to be what they're going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't want to wake up one day and go, well, if it wasn't for that situation or that missed opportunity or whatever, I would have or I could have, you know?
Yes.
So I kind of look at the circumstances as being neutral. And, you know, at the best of them is that they motivate me to get on with what I'm here to do. Because, and I think, Trey, this is not going to be some major aha for you. Well, we don't have as much time as we think we do.
Right. Oh, I know. Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, America and all of its culture at times has not done us any favors with that one, because I think we've lived oftentimes as if we do.
Right.
So that's a long way to say I'm doing great. And
that's good.
You know, the circumstances I could pull out for you, multiple things, even beyond COVID.
Yeah.
But I'm really laser focused on the mission. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. I know we're going to get deep, and I know in our initial conversation, which I meant to go back and look as to when that was, it might've been in 2020. We talked about stoicism and how that's had such an impact on my life. But when you say circumstances are neutral, that really rings a bell for me, because the universe is neutral. The universe doesn't care. COVID doesn't care. I mean, one may argue that based on socioeconomic, you know, well-being, there are certain communities that are more affected or less affected, which there's certainly truth to, but the virus itself doesn't care. And you have to, if you can wake up every single day and realize that not only is nothing working against you specifically in this universe to hold you back, also at the same time, nothing is working within the universe to say, you need to get going. You have all these advantages that you need. You have to do that yourself. That, and I have to imagine that is where the heart of emotional intelligence lies. And please correct me if I'm wrong, because that's just something, a mindset that I've worked so hard to develop over the years.
I think, Trey, in many ways it is, because, you know, I'm going to probably butcher this story, so bear with me.
Go for it.
And for your listeners as well. There's a gentleman by the name of Ian Cron who co-wrote a book called The Road Back to You, which I highly recommend. It's a fabulous book. And the book is sort of around an exploration into the Enneagram, the ancient personality typing system. And I was watching this clip of a video with him, and the subject matter came up about comparison and about, you know, what choices you make, blah, blah, blah. And he was telling this story of, I guess, at the time that Britain occupied India, they wanted to build golf courses. And not being very familiar with how India's landscape and, you know, habitat and all that was, they didn't consider that there were monkeys. And these monkeys, I guess, once they completed these golf courses, the monkeys would steal your ball. And it was one of those things where, you know, at first you kind of chuckle because you go, that's funny. I mean, you'd expect monkeys to do that kind of stuff, but it really got annoying for these players. So the responsible parties started building ways to try to stop the monkeys from stealing the ball.
Yeah.
And it went from like building walls, which is crazy, right, to even trapping them and that kind of thing. And everything failed because, you know, as soon as they got rid of the problem, they came back and on and on and on. And it got to a point where they just warned the golf players, right, play where the ball lies.
Right.
And he was drawing this great point that you got to play the ball where it lies. You know, they tried to eradicate and change the circumstances, right? The issues so that they could play the game the way they wanted to. But it was like, if you want to play golf, you're going to have to accept the fact there are monkeys. So you got to play the ball where it lies. Again, probably butchering that story, but it has so much meaning to it, because I would agree there is injustice. I will agree that, you know, it's not fair that certain people, you know, X and Y, or someone got the job and someone didn't, or someone grew up in a certain neighborhood or versus someone who, I mean, on and on and on. But I've kind of likened it to, okay, you got a limited amount of time.
Absolutely.
And again, the heart of emotional intelligence is not just dismissing how you feel. It quite frankly is, it's the management of how you feel. And I think that's the most effective way to get to that place that we want to be, or the places that we want to go.
I love that. Adapting to changing circumstances. I think that is extremely, well, I think after 2020, it's more important than it ever has been. I have seen, in essence, two different sides to the way 2020 treated us. I personally, and I don't know if this is luck, hard work, or just people I network with, I generally have conversations with people who say 2020 was very good to them. There was a year of growth. It was a year of abundance, which is fantastic. Obviously, there was a huge, huge portion of the country, in Ohio, and of the world, who were affected negatively by COVID-19. Some who received the virus, or received is probably the wrong way of putting it, but somebody who got the virus, who went to the hospital, who has longstanding effects, or even people who maybe didn't get the virus, but they have an emotional toll from being cooped up inside and not having the human interaction that they're used to. And so we all have these changing circumstances that we need to learn to adapt to. And I wonder how much of what you do has changed in the past year and a half because of the way that people are operating that they haven't operated in their entire lives prior to.
Yes, and it has changed. And I think pre-COVID, for example, you know, emotional intelligence development data was kind of a take it or leave it proposition.
Yeah.
Whether that was organizational or whether that was individual. And it didn't mean that we were consistently getting people dismissing it as if it were some kind of, you know, I guess for lack of a non-starter or, a mythic or whatever you want to call it. But there certainly was a, well, we might. Yeah, that sounds good. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
It was kind of that kind of motion. Once COVID hit, amongst all the other things of 2020, it brought front and center to a reality that many of us in the people development realm have always known. All these things that were called soft skills were not soft. And I'm absolutely thrilled, Trey, for the clients that we work with who have embraced this awakening that says, okay, it's no longer a take it or leave it. I can't just let my people just go off the cliff or right. or run right into that wall. So they have an urgency about it. Now, once you take that, then there's this eye-opening reality of, okay, we can't just go in and in a day give you transformation.
Right.
Because every human being has developed all these neural pathways that don't change overnight. They just don't. And what we've found is that looking at it optimistically and in a very positive way is that when we encounter those that are like, yes, absolutely. And it doesn't matter if I didn't understand it 2 years ago or I didn't give it a high level of importance, I'm doing that now. I think the other side of that equation are those that know that it's needed, but are struggling with that sort of internal civil war about, again, that neural pathway that says, oh, we can't invest all that money into how do we know? And what if our people don't? And, you know, and those folks, my hope for them is that those organizations, if I can say it that way, are going to come to, you know, we have to do this.
Right.
And I know some that won't. I mean, that's a part of the deal too. But there's certainly more urgency around it now than there was a year and a half, 2 years ago.
So how do these organizations come to this realization? I mean, is it pressure internally from employees or, you know, people who have stakes within the organization simply because, you know, these people have choices to go elsewhere when it comes to employment or making money? Obviously, I think we saw a big shift over the last year where people are finding a newfound freedom with remote work and a new sense of, hey, I actually have time to do the things that I enjoy. Or is it based in altruism where a company really, really wants to take care of their employees so they not only have a financial benefit to having longevity within their workforce, but because they truly care about a person's well-being? And I'll use this term that I've had a guest mention before, psychological safety within the workplace, not feeling, you know, not having that, you know, heightened cortisol level because you always feel like you're on the edge of a cliff.
Yep. I think for us, and some of this is on purpose because in our vetting process, we do everything we can to make sure that the motivations for working on emotional intelligence and its development, the data, all of that is, as to your term, altruistic, right?
Yeah.
They really actually care. So I would say at this point, Trey, our universe is made up of majority are organizations, leaders who actually really do care. And I think some of that was brought about because 2020, not only was it had its uncertainty, but it was vivid change, like on a dime.
Right.
And then you had more change that came in a short period of time after, and it just repeated itself. So we have clients, and one I'm thinking of specifically, they just send me a note and say, my people are just overwhelmed. What do I do to help them? Now, to recognize that is one thing.
Right.
to actually, you know, hey, I've got to do something, you know, is another big step. And I think these things were so vivid in 2020 and obviously into 2021 as well, that I think their view of it is, I can't just let my people go over the cliff.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I get there's some motivation in there probably to preserve their business or to carve out survival for their business for our future ahead, all of that. And that's okay. But again, with our clients, the people that we work with, I would say it's more of the, we care about our people.
That's great. So my curiosity lies when you say that. I mean, we're both, you're in Columbus, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, one, do you work outside the Columbus market? And two, if you do, Columbus is a fairly progressive city. And so I would imagine, you know, companies like Cover My Meds, big companies really truly have their, for the most part, the best interests of their employees in mind. But when you go to more rural areas, even in Ohio, areas that may be mining communities or what have you, or even industrial communities, does that mindset change as you get into different, I guess, demographic areas, based on, you know, the type of industry?
You know, that's a great question, Trey, because, you know, we were asked a couple of weeks ago by a vendor about, you know, what industries do we prefer and where we found the most success. Yeah. And what we have found is that it's not so much an industry as it is the heart of that leader,
yeah,
who is making the decision. So in with your question, it's kind of the same thing. I wouldn't say that, I mean, and we do have clients outside of Central Ohio, but I wouldn't say that I've encountered that there was some, demographic or some cultural difference, be it East Coast, West Coast, North, South, what have you. Right. I think it, again, comes into the profile of that decision-making leader. Now, I will tell you, the approach to solving the problem can be different. Our clients that we've worked with on the West Coast, they're a bit more creative. Sometimes they're not real focused,
right,
in solutions, right? We have a client who's a defense contractor in Virginia, and it was like laser. It was like, okay, we want to do step one, step two, step three.
Yeah.
So there's where the variance probably lies. And then probably lastly, we made a conscious decision that any organization that we work with, any individual, and we split between the two. I mean, some of it's organizational work, some of it is individual leaders who just, they've determined that they need to go on this path, is that we won't do any short-term engagements. And for us, for an organization, that's probably about 9 to 12 months at a minimum.
Yeah.
And it's not because we don't think that they don't have the acumen to catch it and get it. We just have learned from experience that in order to move to the kind of behavior change that they want, it's going to take that long. And if I go and present that we'll do it in a shorter period of time, I'm ultimately, then it starts to become a case of purely based on economics, right?
Right.
Hey, I'll do it for you for this price and for this long, blah, blah, blah. But that does not fit what we do. And again, I think that connects into like with your question, which is, again, the motivation and what's the driver, right?
Yeah.
So from that perspective.
That's that's interesting. I seem to be having more and more conversations surrounding motivation. And almost every time I have a conversation about motivation and what motivates me and what motivates people who are high achievers, Maslow comes into the conversation and his hierarchy of needs. Knowing what a business surrounding emotional intelligence really entails and how, you know, that development occurs. I mean, how much do you work with people based on what motivates them?
Yes. So, you know, our process, you know, fairly high level is that vetting the beginnings, you know, what are they looking to do? What's the problem they're trying to solve? Where does it hurt? What's caused them to see, at least perceive that they have a need? Because Trey, and I think you and I talked about this, offline at some point where we talked about this definition of emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how badly in America, anyway, we have the mischaracterization of what emotions are. So you have a number of organizations and individuals who maybe they grew up believing that, you know, some emotions are good and some emotions are bad,
right?
Which is not the case at all.
Right.
Right. And we do our very level best to make sure that when we communicate this alternative view, the one that science backs up, which is emotions are chemicals in your brain. And they're kind of like neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
They're telling you something. They're messengers to sort of mix the layman and the science there. But ultimately, it's not a case of this is good and this is bad. And that's one example. So if you, as a leader, come into it going, well, I got to get my people away, that they're so angry right now, and we've got to get that to, we've got to end that because that's harming us. Well, wait a minute. That's, have you explored that? Well, why are your people angry?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think is behind the anger? And again, as the growth happens, is what is your anger telling you? What makes an emotion good or bad is determined by the action that we take in response to it. I mean, that's ultimately what makes it good or bad. And maybe in America, our response to anger is typically not a good one. But, you know, from that standpoint, it's them coming in with that sort of potential misconception. So once we've established and got sort of on level ground, then there's the introduction of data. And that's where we measure where the emotional intelligence level is of those, the organization, the people, or the individual. And then we can truly know what's the pathway to carve out for their growth.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's in the form of group cohorts that meet on a consistent basis over that 1 year period, with work in between and encouragement and messaging that reinforces learning. Or it could be that individual leader that meets every Wednesday at 9 a.m. to take that data and what are we working on? What do we want to accomplish and carve out a pathway for them? So those are just some examples of it. Now, the bottom line for that business, organization, or quite frankly, the individual, is that what change will I get? What will be different once I do all of this? And though our processes are not perfect, there's not going to be, I can't pull out for you a spreadsheet that quantifies that by doing X, you're going to get, you know,
right,
here's the return on your investment and your sales are going to go up by Y. Though there is some science that does establish the connection between behavioral change, but I don't like to do that because I'm not the kind of, we're not the kind of company that is looking at the finish line and going, okay, well, where are sales at right now?
Right.
I equated, Trey, to a comment that I got from a CEO last week that said, you know, Eric, I see so-and-so and they're happier. I can see it.
That's amazing.
When a leader can communicate that to me, that's what we look for.
Yeah.
And they should be able to see that. Just as one example.
That's great. That's a fantastic example. Now, when you, I guess pushing it a little bit further, when you work with teams or individuals, I think you mentioned cohorts.
Yeah.
You know, when we first spoke, we talked a little bit about spiritual, emotional intelligence, and I'm curious what that the difference is there, or how that takes it a step further. And my specific question is, you know, when I think about how I was able to develop my emotional intelligence. A lot of it goes back to just simply meditation, and you can add the spiritual component to it if you want to. But when I really break it down for what it means for me, is that I'll sit in silence for 20 minutes. Thoughts will come up, thoughts will leave, and it's not me judging the thoughts. You know, when I really became successful at meditating, it was me recognizing the thought, recognizing the emotion, and breaking it down just a little bit, saying, hey, this is where this emotion came from. It's not good. It's not bad. It is what it is. And then letting it move on. And so I'm curious what spiritual components, if any, you know, play into your development I think you said people development, and I'm curious if those two tie into each other.
Yeah, they can. And some of that is rooted in the organization's willingness to embrace it. Yeah. Because as I know, you know, Trey, that when you bring up a term like spiritual, it can have some impact,
right,
in ways that don't necessarily lend to, shall we say, openness,
sure,
if you will.
Yes.
So, but there is some science around this. The spiritual part of our being and our emotional side are located on the same side of our brains.
Yeah.
So we determined that, though we're not going to force the issue by any stretch, we certainly have offerings that say, you know, if you want to go deeper, if you're ready to go a bit deeper, we have another tool that measures your spiritual emotional intelligence. And I kind of liken it to just, you know, in a straightforward way, layman terms, again, I guess, would be the spiritual component is really about positioning. Like, how positioned am I to take on, to do, to be who I am?
Yeah.
I think one of the great tragedies in America right now is that we have so many people that are struggling with being who they are,
right,
who they really are.
Right.
Now, whether that's because they had a parent or parents that told them you shouldn't act that way, or you're never going to make it if you keep doing X or Y or Z, or if you've got an organization, a workplace that says, you know, check your attitude, check your person at the door. You need to become who we want you to become because our clients are whatever.
Yeah.
So I view the spiritual side of it as that positioning thing. How aligned am I with who I truly am? And the danger, and I mentioned at the beginning there about the, you know, it kind of can put people off a little bit by the mention of spiritual. It's because, again, we've done this mischaracterization. When we say spiritual, people think, well, I don't go to church.
Right.
Oh, we're mentioning spiritual. Well, you know, I'm not a real religious person. At the end of the day, that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
Now, you could use our tool to enhance and further your relationship with God or with whatever it is that you pursue.
Yeah.
But that's not the core of it. What we're talking about is you. There's only one Trey Kaufman.
Right.
I mean, that is established, Trey. There ain't another one of you. Okay. So we're talking about how positioned is Trey to be Trey. Right. And this tool can help that. Now, again, depending on how progressive the organization is, how open they are to it, will determine whether or not they choose to go down that path. But we always offer that because we think it's a vital part of the equation. You know, again, it is not an all bets are off if you don't do it. Because at the end of the day, if somebody said, I just can't go the spiritual thing, it's just, I can't get that approved or whatever the case may be, just doing purely learning how to manage your thoughts and emotions to make better decisions, which is emotional intelligence, will lead to some great breakthroughs.
Absolutely.
And who knows, Trey? I mean, you could have someone who said, hey, I know my company's not going to pay for it, but I'm interested in that thing on my own.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know how that plays out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say there's only one Trey Kaufman. I've got a Google alert set up for myself, which sounds narcissistic, but I think everybody should do it so you know what's being said about you. There is a Trey Kaufman who plays basketball for like North Carolina. And I trust me, I am not him. I'm not good at basketball, but your point is very valid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, in regard to our country, I've been around for 35 years. I've really only paid attention to politics since maybe the early to mid aughts, the mid, you know, 2004, 2008. And I have only recently started seeing, you know, what you mentioned about people not being comfortable necessarily with who they are. And obviously the last year was difficult for many people and many, for many different reasons. And you know, I've got my own beliefs and other people have their own beliefs, and which is great. And one thing that I've wanted to start doing, because I think it's important, is trying to bridge the gap, which, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric around that, which is great if we can follow through with it. But I just, yeah. when I see, you know, people that I tend to respect, you know, just continuing to make fun of the other side, just for laughs, for clicks, for whatever it is, that I used to laugh at that. I used to, you know, click a heart, a like, whatever. It used to be funny to me, but now it's starting to pain me, because I can see how just these little jabs are creating these major issues within us as people, not just us as Americans, and it's becoming a real big problem. And I'm doing my absolute best to understand where people's fear comes from, because I think that's a lot of what the underlying root causes. You know, we are fearful of not, you know, getting a seat at the table, or not getting our fair share of stimulus checks or vaccines or whatever it is. And I don't think that these little jabs are beneficial to coming together, you know, as one race, one species, or whatever you want to call it.
I think one thing, Trey, that really leaps out to me is, again, that idea at its core of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Managing my thoughts and emotions to make optimal, better decisions. Right. And the questioning of, okay, what is this emotion telling me, is not one of like, hey, I need to sit in a room for an hour to figure that out.
Right.
It's trying to get to the root of, well, what's the why behind that? Right. You know, why are you getting angry with this person because of their view that's different than yours? Right. What's behind being curious? And we probably have a whole show on the lack of curiosity in our country.
Yeah.
But I firmly believe if I'm willing to embrace curiosity, well, especially with myself, like, well, Eric, why does that make you uncomfortable? And what's really behind that?
Right.
How did that start? What are you doing? No, don't focus on Trey and on that political party or whatever. Focus on you for a little bit. And then I think oftentimes, and I'm going to speak for myself here, Trey.
Yeah.
Typically find there's an issue that's much deeper, and most of the time relates closer to me than it does to that other person or other people or that organization. I might find myself using those people, those organizations as my distraction, my scapegoat, to mask my unwillingness to actually look at why do I get angry? Why do I get fill in the blank?
Yeah.
And hear me out, Trey, and for your audience. This is not about judgment of yourself or anyone else. That's the beauty of curiosity. It's opening your mind to learn and to discover. Once you do that and you exhaust that curiosity, then you can make a healthy judgment.
Yes.
You know, that healthy judgment that says, well, maybe, you know what? I spend too much time on Twitter. That's the issue. That's what's the big deal. It's not the president. It's not the political parties. It's not my friend who doesn't believe in what I believe. It's that I'm spending too much time here.
Yeah.
That's the issue. And man, that should be liberating for us, because then we can kind of go, all right, what do I need to do? And Trey, I will tell you, I was doing a show last week, and the question came up about, well, how do I, you know, I can't remember exactly what their issue was, but it was a big how do I that is really not something you could in the, you know, the span of 2 minute answer. And I said to it, you know, here's the deal. There's multiple layers in what they asked. However, if we could just use this simple little plan, is what I'm doing making my life better?
Yeah.
Use that as your filter to pour everything through. Is me looking at Twitter making my life better? at the amount of time that I spend there. Is me hitting like for a jab or whatever, is that making my life better? And if we have that spirit of curiosity, we'll be willing to, without judgment, to go, well, you know what? I don't think it's helping anybody. It's not helping me. I think I'm going to do something different. Or yes, this is absolutely what I should be involved in. This is absolutely what, because it is making my life better and I know it and I can see it.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe you should continue that. That's where I go with it. And I think, again, kind of the spirit of the, why we do the work we do is to help people and give them tools to actually do that as a practice every day.
That's great. The way you said that is absolutely perfect. I guess to an extent that is something I've tried to practice without putting words to it, but you know, is what I'm doing making my life better? And I imagine you can take it one step further once you're able to answer that question honestly. Is what I'm doing making the lives of the lives of people I care about better? And if that answer is no, then you can reevaluate.
Yes, and Trey, if you think about it, let's just use Ohio as just the grand example, right?
Yeah.
What if every citizen in Ohio adopted that? Like, we were this weird thing that happened to Ohio. Something got in the water and everybody started looking every day. Okay, it's what am I doing? It's what I'm doing. Is it making my life better? I think the ripple effect from that kind of thing, it would almost be like a tsunami.
Yeah.
Right? Because all of a sudden, I'm not looking through a lens of judgment. I'm not looking through a lens of insecurity and, you know, all of that stuff. I've started to make that movement. And I guess I'm saying it that way to say, I think one of the mistakes that the United States has made is that we've jumped over into Washington, D.C. to solve.
Yeah.
Where really the solving begins with us as individuals.
Absolutely.
Right? And as we get better, Trey, as you become more emotionally intelligent, I become more emotionally intelligent, that has effects on children, friends, wives, spouses, husbands, partners, whatever you want to use, neighbors, coworkers, right?
Yeah.
And again, I'm not trying to paint this picture like, oh, this solves everything. But my goodness, what if one of your friends who's been maybe kind of pessimistic over the last 3 years starts to see you becoming more optimistic and starts to think, oh, you know, I need to ask Trey, what's driving all that? Maybe I should think about that. And then the person he works with, and then instead of this, hey, you over there in DC, I need you to pass a law.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Just my sort of my perspective on that.
No, it's a great perspective. And actually, the way you say that, it resonates with me because, I don't know, but 3-4 years ago, I decided I'm done with social media and I quit. I was done. I didn't want that negativity in my life. And I wiped my hands and I was done. And, you know, as I went into business for myself, as I started this particular podcast, I realized, okay, maybe I can't be fully done with social media. And so I gradually got back into it. Sometime last year, maybe 2019 when this started, I decided that if I'm going to put anything on social media, anything at all, it's going to be positive. It's not going to be toxically positive. It's not going to be toxic positivity. I don't buy that. I don't think it's good for anybody. It's just going to have a positive tone. If I'm going to post anything, I'm not going to attack anybody, which I have done in the past because I was an angry person for a long, long time, which tends to surprise some people sometimes, but that is, you know, the work I've done on myself. But whatever I post on social media, it is going to have, it's going to be positive. With the goal of it positively impacting other people who wish to follow me. And I have had people reach out and say, how do you do this? Why, you know, what is it about you, about what the work you've been doing, it allows you to be so positive? I say, listen, I put this out there because I don't want to have a negative impact on somebody. I am constantly working on myself. I get angry on occasion when my Google Home screws up and doesn't hear me. I get irrationally angry at stupid things, but I'm able to move past them. And if I'm going to put anything out into the world, I want people to be lifted up, not dragged down from it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And again, I'm one of those people that believes that as you do that, and as others catch that fire, you begin to see change. And don't get me wrong, I know that whatever forms of media, be they social, traditional, I know that they have a louder, or they have a loudspeaker that has volume that goes up much higher.
Right.
However, I do believe real change occurs at that level. It really does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So going back to the start here and talking about the video you put out at the beginning of 2021, and we talked, or you were discussing exercising optimism and that being the precursor to innovation. Can you dig into that a little bit and talk to me about how that works?
Sure. In regards to the work we do, I mean, it's human innovation, right? It's this idea that, okay, we've been doing it this way and handling this particular subject matter in a certain manner for this many years, and we're going to make a change. And what we have found is that optimism is a key component, a key competency that if exercised, it does make people more open to innovation. Right. And though I know the term innovation typically is attached to technology and product and commercialization of product, all that stuff, I mean, I'm talking about, I mean, simply like what you just described. You were off of social media. There's some changes made, and as far as entrepreneurship, it's not real practical for you not to be on it, but you made a decision. I'm going to be positive, and things that I put out are going to be on the positive. That's innovation. Yeah. That's human innovation. Now, the opposite is true as well. Pessimism, typically, you know, if you've run into pessimists, I know a few, they don't see how it can get any better.
Yeah.
They don't see how it's going to be changed. It's too late. We've gone too far. And those folks are very difficult to show that there is an opening and an opportunity, right? And I know there's some out there that would say, well, why you don't waste your time with those folks. And at some levels, that is true. Yeah. But for illustration purposes, this is why, you know, emotional intelligence is a learnable skill. It's learnable. It means you can learn to do it and practice it. Yeah. So if you're a pessimist, you can learn to be an optimist if you choose to put in the work and to work on yourself and on and on and on. And personally, Trey, in my 2020, I got a diagnosis that made COVID look really small from a health perspective. And I had a choice to make as I was going through and still am going through to, okay, how am I going to look at this thing?
Right.
And what am I going to, how am I going to live? And I do, man. I firmly believe that there's a limited amount of time to get done the things that I was put here to do.
Absolutely.
And I've let that create in me an optimistic urgency. That's kind of been my resounding theme over the last probably 12 months or so. Optimistic urgency. No waiting around. No, I've got time. No, I, you know, one day we should. We, no, it's get after it now. Today is your day. And from a spiritual perspective, and this is where my God thing comes out, Trey, is I firmly believe, man, that there will be a day when I'm going to be in front of God and I'm going to be asked, okay, I gave you this great life. I gave you this gift. What did you do with it?
Right.
Now, I don't want to make it sound like, oh, well, you know, if you did 15 good things and 20 bad, then you're out or whatever. That's not my point. My point is, did you embrace and use what you were given?
Yeah.
And I want to be in that place, Trey, where I can say, yeah, man, there were like these 20 circumstances that I was pissed about. I hated that. Why did that have to happen? But I was determined. I'm not going to let that stop me from doing what I was put here to do. And again, I'm going to stress to you, man, because my stuff, your stuff, people you know, people I know, distant, close, whatever, have been dealing with all kinds of things.
Yeah.
COVID related and non-COVID related. All I'm saying is it is so vitally important to be who you are and to go live that life you were supposed to be living.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what pushed that idea of optimism and innovation as I was going into, you know, recording that for 2021, is that understanding that if you're going to embrace innovation and change, you have to be optimistic, because you got to believe that what I'm doing is going to produce a good thing, a good result. It may not look exactly like you thought it was going to, but my gosh, Trey, I don't know about you. My life looks nothing like I thought it was going to look. I mean, yeah. Nothing like, you know?
Yeah.
But it's okay. It, quite frankly, it's better than okay. It's really great. But again, if you would have known me 15 years ago and said, hey, what do you think 15 years from now? It would look like this.
Yeah. That's powerful. You know, hearkening back just a little bit to Stoicism, there's a saying that probably has become somewhat cliche at this point in time, memento mori. We can leave this earth at any point in time. And it's just a great reminder that no matter, you know, if you're 35, if you're 15, if you're 85, the only time to start is now. And if there's something we want to accomplish, then we have to start now so we can. Because what we're doing is we're planting seeds, and seeds don't grow overnight. They don't oftentimes grow in a week. And the things that we're planting could not blossom or bloom, you know, for years. And so to get started on that, you can't wait. You really can't wait. A lot of people feel like they need more life experience to write a book that they want to write, or to, you know, build a business that they don't think they have enough experience for. It's just get started now. And I can't stress that enough. And the way you just said it was perfect.
Well, and Trey, you know, here's the thing. You know, we talked at the beginning about this idea of circumstances.
Yeah.
I've got enough years under my belt now that I can look back and go, you know, there's always been something that comes up.
Right.
There's always been the unexpected. There's always been someone who said, oh, I've changed my mind. Or someone who said, you know what? We talked to you 2 years ago. We'd like to start now.
Yeah.
And you're going, hey, what? How did that, where did that go? You know, you're kind of going, boy, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And once you do that, you can kind of, it's almost like, you know, and I heard this, I can't remember the speaker, but it was like going from the basement to the balcony. Daniel Goleman, that's what he said. Daniel Goleman had that. He was given this talk and he said, sometimes you have to go from the basement to the balcony, right?
Yeah.
I that idea for me is like going up and taking a longer view of things. And what I've found, there's always been circumstances that were stacked against me.
Yeah.
There were always those moments where it was, you know, 5 minutes from going over the ledge or what have you. And you know what? They're going to continue that way. So if they're going to continue and they're not going to ask me, you know, whether or not I'm good with it, well, why don't I just get on with it, you know? Yeah. And as you were alluding to, go ahead and write the book.
Yes.
Go ahead and start the business. Just go ahead and see what happens. And again, I don't want to diminish those that might be listening that could say, Eric, I'm afraid or whatever. I get it. Again, you had me on your show, Trey. I'm going to talk about emotional intelligence.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's things you can do to help you deal with the fear, to get you to that next step and on and on. I always like to put that out there because I don't want people to think that I'm portraying it as if, oh, just start it tomorrow and then it happens.
Right.
But you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And to your point, you know, we don't live in a vacuum. So, of course, things are going to happen and things are going to come up where we have to call an audible and we have to shift not only our way of thinking, but the way we're executing on what we're working on. And that is part of the growth. That is part of this human experience, is learning how to adapt and change and ultimately become better at what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and Trey, that idea of optimism again and the innovation. I've heard it said that some of the things that have happened in the last 12 months were already on their way.
The
virus just accelerated it.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I know that is kind of difficult to look when you're in the basement, right? We use Daniel Goleman's analogy. When you're in the midst of it, but I'm learning to more and more just take a step back. And okay, if things were on their way for significant change, we need optimism to go, okay, well, if I've got to live differently, if I've got to work differently, if I've got to strategize differently, then what would I want that to be? Right. How could I do that? And it can kind of set you in motion toward breakthrough, right? Yeah. I get very, very concerned. And I have people in my family are like this, where it seems as if they're like on the sideline waiting for pre-pandemic. That's kind of what they're waiting for. And they would tell you, well, when we get to being able to do what we did, and in my mind, I'm going, some of that I totally get.
Right.
However, what if there's a percentage of that that's never coming back?
Yeah.
And not because of a pandemic. It's just there's been this fundamental shift.
Absolutely.
You know, I firmly, firmly believe that's where optimism can be your ally in navigating that. Because I can't imagine how you would look at it if you were a pessimist.
I agree with you completely. You know, for a lot of us, our only point of reference for global pandemics is, you know, looking back 100 years.
Right.
And obviously the world changed significantly back in 1918, I think it was. But... I think one of the biggest factors that is going to prevent us from going back to the way it was in 2019 is technology. I think technology has played such a major impact on the way we live our lives, whether or not that's working from home or even experiencing media. For example, movie theaters. The movie theaters were, you know, teetering back and forth on the fence as to whether or not they're going to survive or not going into the next 10 years. And I think this is probably pushing them a little bit closer to not with all of our subscription services or concerts, just the way we consume content. Things will not be the way they were in 2019 ever again. And I really do think technology has a big, you know, piece to play in that.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Yeah. And, you know, here's the thing too, Trey, and I want to say we talked about this offline, this idea of these neural pathways.
Yeah.
And again, one of those things that, you know, I don't want to get too wonky around that idea, but, you know, all of us have developed these neural pathways over time. And some of them were created when we were really, really young, formidable. Maybe it was the way that we crafted the pathway to be able to manage living in a home that was, you know, really volatile or really nurturing, whatever it may be. And these neural pathways can be as simple and straightforward as a residential street. And they can be as complex as a freeway system.
Right.
The thing that confronts people is when they... or when change comes at them. And this is why 2020 was so heavy, if I can use it as a term, because it came rapidly and it was shifted quickly.
Yeah.
And there was really not, I mean, it wasn't like you had a say in the matter. It was just, it's going to be this way now. And that puts a lot of weight on us to navigate. And again, this is not me saying, okay, here's what you do, X, Y, and Z. But I would highly recommend for your listeners, and I try to consistently absorb and digest this too, is what's been created?
Yeah.
What pathways have I been using? And if I know that digesting content from a technology standpoint has changed, and even if it's a minor thing,
right,
even if it's just how I get entertainment, what do I need to do differently? How do I need to view it differently? If I'm no longer going to be, and this is more major, right? If I'm no longer going to be working in an office environment like it was in 2019,
yeah.
How do I make working from home more effective? How do I avoid screen burnout or whatever it may be? Those neural pathways are it's kind of like it's our GPS, right?
Absolutely.
And just as a warning, when you go to make that change, the first, I don't know, chapter or so of the change, your brain's going to fight you on it.
Yeah.
Because our brains are, I mean, they're our ally. They've created these neural pathways for our protection and for our benefit. So when you come along, Trey, and say, you know what, I'm going to start exercising at 5:30 in the morning, and I used to do it at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
You may say, oh, that's not a big deal. Well, try it. And I bet you anything, your brain will resist. Maybe not to a point of stopping you by yeah. any stretch, but I bet it'll resist.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So from that standpoint, that kind of makes me think about when you were talking about that perspective around technology and all is these neural pathways.
Yeah.
As we, again, get better at managing those thoughts and emotions, we can begin that process, too, of, okay, how do I carve that out and make that something that, again, is my ally and not my enemy?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That is something that's, I think, extremely important to for us to all just kind of reflect upon and answer that question. But... you know, I truly appreciate you taking the time to do this with me today, because I've had many conversations where emotional intelligence came up. I mean, the phrase, and we've talked briefly about it, but having somebody who has a foundation in the concept and just having this really deep conversation about it has been extremely powerful and moving for me. So, Eric, I thank you for that.
Oh, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So to kind of bring things to a close here, I do have a few closing questions I'd like to ask you. You know, let's say we've talked about America as a whole. We've talked about Ohio specifically. I mean, if there's one person out there listening in, I don't know, Wyoming, that really resonates with the message that you brought forth today, and they think that they can, you know, be of a benefit to you, what resources are you looking for to continue growing that somebody could lend you?
If I, I'm kind of going at it from the perspective of what, I mean, you obviously your show has show notes. So if anybody wants to reach out to me
Absolutely.
Directly and want something deeper and more direct, you can feel free to do that. I find that, for example, I mentioned this book at the fairly beginning, I guess pretty close to the beginning of your show, The Road Back to You and the Enneagram. That tool has been very, very helpful for me, that book and the content, to help me with more of this self-discovery, self-knowledge idea, right? Because emotional intelligence, you know, again, it's learnable. And anybody wants to get better at it, grow at it, whatever, you can do it. And the tools and the data and all the things that are at your disposal to access and leverage. Personality is different. It kind of gets connected in some ways to that spiritual side. It's who we are, right? And I'm determined in this and that the more that I know who I am, the better I'm going to be able to live out those things that I know I'm supposed to, that I'm here for. And I'll be able to be better informed around managing those thoughts and emotions because I know who I am. Absolutely. And Trey, I'll just tell you, I didn't always believe that. I mean, I was a great actor when I was in corporate America. I mean, Oscar worthy.
I
mean, even had former peers, colleagues who would say, wow, I thought you really were into it. And I just, I mean, I got lost in the dogma of societal expectations, family, and all that other stuff. And, you know, but I'm, you know, as I've moved on and went into entrepreneurism and all the other, that self-exploration of knowing, hey, this is what I do. This is what my style is. And I almost look at it, it's like your musical taste.
Yeah.
I love Miles Davis, but Trey, you may hate it, but I'm okay with that.
Right.
Cause I'm into Miles Davis. It does something for me, versus me trying to pretend that I don't like Miles Davis because I'm hoping that Trey will be more impressed by me if I say fill in the blank.
Right.
Those things are really good. That book, and that's a long way around to why I like that book so much. And then the podcasting, piece, you know, your show is a great example. You've got a lot of positive people with some great insights from a health perspective. And when I say health, I'm going my impression, meaning health, meaning spiritual, mental, physical, emotional, all of those.
Absolutely.
Not just, you know, what vitamins or food we're intaking. And as well with us, our podcast is designed to help and educate people around emotional intelligence. So I think podcasts are a great resource, whether it's yours, whether it's ours, whether there's some other thought leader out there. Those are a couple of things that I would say are go-to. And then sort of the last thing, and this is really, really crucial. You got to be willing to work on yourself.
Yeah.
You have to see working on yourself as equally as important as that project your company just announced 2 months ago. And that is like the 800-pound gorilla in the corner of the room, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
The company says the project must be done by fourth quarter. We're morning, noon, and night. Somebody says, hey, you need to work on yourself. You need to get in better shape mentally.
Right.
Well, I'm going to let me get back to you on that.
No. Yeah.
So that's the key one. That's sort of the underpinning for everything else there.
Yeah. It's that resonates with me deeply. I do a fairly good job of working on myself, but when it comes to, for example, working on my business instead of my client's business, I always find reasons to not. Like I've been working on a new website for myself for about 8 months, and I have not taken the time to finish it. So yes, I work on yourself. I couldn't agree more with that.
And Trey, you know, you're not alone in the universe. I've been working third book for a long time, and it's on my growth plan for 2021. But I feel you.
That's good. Okay. I'm glad I'm not alone. Misery loves company in that regard. So I appreciate that. Eric, when we first spoke, I warned you about this question. You promised me you'd have an answer, and you may have already given it to me. So, you know, feel free to use it. But I like to ask, you know, if you could credit one book with changing your life, what would that book be? And, you know, why has it done so, or how has it done so?
Yeah, I'm probably Ian Cron would hire me as his agent at this point, because it is that book and the most recent frame for me. Because The Road Back to You, and he has a co-author, and I want to say it's Suzanne Stabile or something like that, but it really, I don't know, for lack of a better way of saying it, it accurately identified my personality, and I found myself in agreement with it, not because I wanted to agree with it, but because the things that they pointed out in the book were consistent with who I've been for virtually all my life.
Yeah.
And that self-knowledge has been not only liberating, it's given me a higher level of confidence about what I do and how I do it.
That's great.
Because, you know, I've had my times, Trey, and it's lasted a lot longer than I care to admit, where I always thought everybody else had it more together than I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Their website is better than mine. They're doing things that I'm not doing, you know, but the book really kind of put it in motion for me not as a solving of Eric, but it's like, you know, in many ways, it was like God putting his hand on my shoulder saying, Eric, I made you to be this. And it's really good. It's really good. And now I believe it.
That's
so
fantastic.
That's the reason.
That's awesome. All right. One last question. This is a new question that I actually just recently thought of adding. And so if you had a personal call to action, and you've already actually given me one that I will use if you want to defer, but if you had a personal call to action for anybody listening, what would it be?
Oh gosh, I think I'm going to end up repeating myself again, like the book. Work on yourself.
Yes, that's what I wrote down. I love that answer. So that's great.
That should be the highest priority.
Yeah.
And I want to stress here too, Trey, I know that could be a challenge for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, and I get all the stories and all the narratives that over time that maybe have told us we're not worth it, or there's, you know, but how am I going to win, or, you know, fill in the blank. But if I said to anyone, because that's where it starts.
Yeah.
Now, where your road will lead and the outcome and all that, that's your story.
Absolutely.
But that's the way to get that story out there, yeah. Right? So, yeah, absolutely. Work on yourself.
And what's a good story without conflict? I mean, if we just cruise through life without anything challenging us, then that'd be a boring story.
Oh, my gosh. Think about your favorite movie, yeah. Right? I mean, they all have this blend of all these different things. And if the whole movie was about everything going their way.
nobody would watch it.
Yeah, I was going to say that movie's going to probably lack some funding.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Eric, thank you so incredibly much for doing this. This was a phenomenal conversation. I loved learning more about emotional intelligence. It's something that is so extremely important, especially now. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to contact you, if they want to connect with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
The straightforward, probably the easiest, is just eric@spiritofeq.com. And that's with a C, E-R-I-C.
Awesome. Well, I will have that link in the show notes as well as your other links as well, and the book recommendations too. So thank you for all of that. And thank you again for doing this. It's been an incredible conversation. I very much appreciate you for that.
And Trey, I've enjoyed it. It's been a great conversation for me as well.
Excellent. All right. Thank you again. Again, I would like to extend a huge thank you to Eric for joining me on the podcast. I highly encourage you to check out the show notes at themosaiclifepodcast.com and to connect with Eric if you have any questions about our conversation today. If you would like more content from the Mosaic Life Podcast, you can find me on Instagram at Trey Kaufman. You can find the podcast on Facebook by searching for The Mosaic Life Podcast. And of course, you can join the Mosaic Life Podcast Circle newsletter by going to themosaiclifepodcast.com. Sign up now and you'll be entered to win a Mosaic Life Podcast t-shirt, and you'll receive a list of my 5 most life-changing books from 2020. If you found value in this particular episode, I would appreciate it greatly if you would take just a couple moments of your time to leave a 5-star review. That goes a long, long way in helping others discover the podcast. Thank you all so incredibly much for your time and for demanding the best for yourself. Until next time, take care, do better, and be well.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.